Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston, here at VBS Radio. We have a very special guest with us today, Jay Pierce. Jay Pierce is an investigator here in Ohio of over 20 years. He took a little bit of a retirement. He's coming back into the field to work with me and several other people over the next year for a documentary that we're going to be putting out for everybody to watch. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Welcome, Jay.
Hi, Chris. It's a pleasure to be here, my friend.
So let's just get into a little bit about you. How did you get into the paranormal?
Well, it's a pretty basic story, really. When I was about 12, 13, 14, I was in my house, and there was something in my house that shouldn't have been in my house, and I was always curious as to what it was. And let's just put it this way. I waited and waited and waited until I saw it again. And when I did, it was like, okay, that's not normal. So my interest was piqued then. And I never really pursued it because I was into music and, you know, playing my music and all that. But the more the years went on, the more I found myself in paranormal situations. And it was like, okay, I've got to check into this too. So I kind of made it a passion after that. And I would do, you know, research on certain things. I was born in Lowell, Massachusetts, which has a pretty good history of paranormal activity. And I was able to go to several places, you know, just to test my water and, you know, find out if there was any merit to anything and if I had seen what I actually saw when I was younger. And up until that point, I hadn't really found anything conclusive, so I kept looking and kept looking. I was fortunate enough to move about two blocks away from the Lizzie Borden house in Fall River, Mass. And I was able to walk in there a few times, and As you go into these places, you get a feeling like, okay, something's not right in here. It's like a heavy feeling. And I started developing it then. And that's when I decided, all right, I'm going to take a real serious look. And I became an investigator and been doing it for a while. had to take a break because work came first and I had to pay my real bills. You know, I had to stop having fun and, you know, be an adult. But now I'm like ready to get back into it because I know there's a lot more equipment up there. There's a lot more myths and a lot more things that can be debunked because of technology now. And I'm into that part of it now. If there is truth out there, I want to find it.
Interesting. I think that's what puts us all on that journey eventually. And, you know, we see so many outstanding things. And a lot of us end up, ironically, experiencing these at a young age. I'm not quite sure if that's unique to the thing or the field or the area we should be studying, really, because most people, I don't know about who you talk to, but most of the people that I talk to that got into this field, they didn't have an experience at 15 or at 21, 24, 48 years old that made them get into it. They had an experience somewhere between early 6 to 17 and 23 years old. It seems like we all ran into something early on.
Yeah, I think that if you do have an experience as a younger person, you tend to be drawn to it more. I think people nowadays that are interested in it are watching these TV shows and saying, "Ooh, I want to go do that. I want to do that." And, I mean, that's not reality. And reality is if you actually had something done to you or you witnessed something, yeah, you have a reason to go look for it. Don't do it because of a TV show. I mean, that's not a good reason to do anything.
Well, and that's actually a very good thing to bring up. I know we're going to be talking about that several times in this conversation, but though television is I mean, it's entertainment. It's fun to watch. And
exactly.
It takes a lot of work for people like Zach and all these other people to actually physically do this work because it's not easy being on television. It's never easy.
Right.
And a lot of them, you know, depending on the person, like there are some people that worked in GHI and Ghost Hunters that really wanted to do something real, even though they got caught up with the producers and they got caught up with all the networks and people wanting them to smile or react differently or, you know, fake things from time to time. There are a few people there that, that wanted it to be as real as possible. The reality is TV is not the way this really works.
Exactly. I mean, if I was making that point, it was not meant to be disparative against TV. You know, it's like, don't let the TV shows be the reason you want to do it. You know, it's like if you want to be a fireman because you saw somebody putting out a fire, there you go. Go for it. If you want to be a cop because you saw a cop save somebody or something like that, then that's a good reason. Don't go looking for trouble if you don't know what you're doing because of a TV show. That's one way you can avoid a lot of trouble.
Because reality is sometimes these things do bite back.
Exactly. That's exactly it. I mean, I find myself in situations where, all right, I'm not sure how I get into this, but I'm not sure how I'm getting out of it either. You know, and it's a very, very unsettling feeling. And if you're not prepared to go into that, knowing that something like that could happen, then stop watching TV shows because it's not how it happens.
Now, listeners, just so that you're aware, Jay and I are working on a project called Paranormal Reality. We might actually change this name somewhere along the line, but it's going to be a documentary that we're working on through 2018. The goal is to get it out by 2019 for people to watch. It's going to cover some of these real aspects of the paranormal. The reason I bring that up is because Jay and I have discussed this several times, and this is something I want to discuss in a little bit more detail here on the show. Even though the paranormal is a scary place, and yes, you're going to run into things you can't explain somewhere along the line that's going to scare you, there is also an aspect of the paranormal many, many people don't understand. And when you're young and you go out there on an investigation, that can happen quite frequently. Now, it actually happened to us the first time that I met Jay. He was actually supposed to lead a team that we were going out on for a local investigation just as fun. And we'll talk about that in a little bit of detail while we're on the phone here, Jay, or while we're on the show here, Jay. But yeah. The reality is, and I'm sure you're going to agree with this, or I'll rather ask it. This is the easiest way to do it. A lot of times when people are out on paranormal investigations, how common is it for adrenaline, emotion, and the surroundings to be a good percentage of what you're running into?
Oh, absolutely. Pack mentality rules when it comes to it. If somebody starts getting excited, then the rest of them are going to follow suit. And then pretty soon you're finding things and hearing things that really aren't there or could be explained. But the mentality at the time is, oh, my God, everything's haunted. Look at this. Look at that. And you need to just step back, take a breath, and say, wait a minute, hold on. Let's get a grip on what's going here. And unfortunately, that investigation we are talking about, that never happened.
Yeah, it actually didn't. It's a prime example, and this is one of the things that we are going to show in our documentary. It's a prime example of how all of that adrenaline and all of that mass grouping together can actually result in people thinking they're hearing and seeing things that really aren't there.
Yeah, exactly. The best way to put it, like I said, is pack mentality. I mean, when one goes, considered the alpha, like the leader, then the other ones are going to fall in and say, okay, maybe I did hear something. Now it takes a stronger mind to differentiate between the two. It's like, wait a minute, we didn't hear anything. You're just thinking you're hearing that. And that's my approach to how I want to investigate things, you know?
Well, and that's approach that you don't see on television. You see all the jumping. You see all the excitement. So this is what people want to see when they're watching television. When they go out there, they're assuming they can do the same thing. And the reality is, guys, when you're in the paranormal, the real paranormal, these things don't come on command. They don't come in every investigation. They don't show up when you want them to. In fact, most of the time, I'm sure you'll agree with this, they show up when you don't want them to.
You know, I found that I could go to an investigation at a place, the same place, three times in a row, and out of three times, I might have one paranormal event. But then I can walk into a place where I'm not expecting anything, and then all of a sudden, hey, wow, we got all kinds of evidence. This is nice. I mean, let's check this out. I mean, that's just the way it goes. It's not a prearranged thing. When you walk in, they're not going to say, ooh, let's scare them or let's give them something to talk about. No, it doesn't work that way.
And a prime example of this, guys, during the investigation, Jay took lead for most of it. Then he backed off for the small part of it. I went into a room to do a test. Now, when I test in rooms, I do things that would alarm most people. I will confront the situation. I will treat it as if something's there, and I will be very verbal about it. I did that in this situation. Shortly after that, the whole school let off what could only be explained at the time as a growl. Now, there's an explanation for this. We're going to get into it here in a little while, but I'm sure Jay remembers the growl.
Absolutely. Yep, yep.
Now, this startled everybody. And at the time, you have heightened experience. So you're thinking it could be a demon, could be a bad ghost, could be anything like this. But then you come back. The logical thing is to come back the next day and look at this approach. Now, Jay himself did do that before he discussed it with me. And he was very upfront. So, Jay, tell him what you told me when you came in and sat down after the investigation.
Well, my first – actually, it started right after I left the place. I'm like, hold on a minute. Half the stuff that was going on, it was brought on by hysteria. Okay, we had in the, if you want to call it, I'm not going to disparage anybody, but if you want to call them investigators, we had individuals that should not have been in the building doing that, in my opinion, to begin with. Okay, because it was just, it was unorderly to begin. And it was totally out of control. Everybody was talking all the time, wanting to go this way, one wanting to go that way, trying to pull everybody up, and it was just a mess. So, of course, yeah, the mentality was, once you heard the growl, like, all right, there is something bad here, and then it was out of control from then on. And I think not too far after that, we decided that's it, we're done. And we called it, yep. Called an end to it. Chris and I decided it was time.
Yeah, because there was a lot of hysteria going on at the time. So now Jay revisited me at the same location the next day. He shared his concerns. I perfectly agreed with the concerns. Hey, look, there was a lot of hysteria going on. I do believe that a lot of what we saw could possibly be explained, so we should actually take another look at this. And in my own time, I actually spent some time looking at this schoolhouse afterwards. I found out what the growl was, and this is actually a funny story. There is a cat. He's a very large cat that has now became the mascot of the school because there's a flea market in there. That cat gets into the ventilation system. Now, the school is very, very old, so that everybody knows, and there are moles, there are squirrels, and there are rats that run around in the school. When the cat runs into one in the ventilation system, he begins to growl and hiss. When he does this, you can hear it all through the school at the exact same time, and it sounds just like something very evil growling.
So that was kind of cool that you figured that out.
And this is the point, really, and I'm going to ask you a little bit about your investigations here in a little while, Jay, because I'd be interested in hearing what you've done in the past. But this is the real point of the conversation before we get into a little bit more about Jay, and that is, logically speaking, 99% of the time, when we're out there on investigations, even me as a host can come back the next day, which is what all teams should do, and reassess the situation. Because the reality is what we're going to find the night of the visit might not be what we see in the daylight.
Exactly. Yep. What's your words?
I mean, yeah, so do I.
I'm sorry, Chris.
Oh, no, go ahead.
That the whole investigation. I mean, for one, when I first met the individual, I was kind of like, okay, he starts showing me all this stuff. Would you be interested in jumping in? I'm like, okay. And then I was asked to take the lead, and, you know, I thought my ideas of how we should handle the investigation were spot on, but it never came to fruition because he took the lead back, because we weren't doing things, we weren't going directly to where the sounds and ghosts and everything were, according to him. So that kind of led me down the bad road, and it's like, okay. As you know, Chris, I would back off into another room and just get away from the insanity for a little while and just do my own thing. You know, it's like, I can't be part of that. I mean, hysteria is going to happen when you're with a bunch of people and something really strange happens. But you need to be able to compose yourself and take a breath and say, okay, let's wait. Let's see if it happens again. Not run after it. Well, you do run after it, but not wait and wait and wait. And then all of a sudden another door is, oh, let's all run in here. No, you split the teams up. You go this way. You go that way. you stay here and come back and report, tell me what you find. There was none of that involved in this.
Nope. And the other thing is the equipment involved was actually quite primitive, to be honest with you guys. Listeners, the way most paranormal teams work is you're going to have some form of video cameras. It's nice to have night vision if you have it, but let's face it, beginning investigators may not be able to afford some of the more advanced equipment. But you should always have a digital recorder. You should always have your video camera available. And you should always have a couple other key pieces of equipment. Now, most of the equipment that was done on this one were cell phones. Here's the reality of a cell phone. First off, you're going to catch a lot of images that aren't going to work. I'm just going to be upfront about it. It's a small lens camera. Most of the lenses were originally created by Kodak and Sony. They've been reproduced since then. They have their own flaws. You're going to have limited video footage. So once your card is filled, and you can't do squat. Mm-hmm. And they have their own issues. For instance, what we ran into on the investigation. We were in an old boiler room that still had electricity and so forth running through it. Now, there's a main conduit in that area. Ironically, we were getting disturbances on the cell phones. They were shutting off, recordings weren't working right, and so forth. The AMF detector was going off at weird times. This is all explainable by that conduit. Once that conduit, because it's so old, starts to leak, guess what's going to happen? Your cell phone is going to turn off because it interferes with the communication signal. The EMF detector is going to go crazy no matter where you put it, and it's going to spike in different fields because the leak is coming out in different ways.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of different things. And even if you have a digital video camera, it's more likely your video camera is going to disturb or the battery is just simply going to go on you because that field is so great there. And these are all things that weren't picked up the night of the investigation or discussed the day after the investigation that real investigators would catch on to very quickly. So let's talk about some of your investigations, Jay. I know you were with a team at one point.
Yep, I was actually with a couple teams, yeah.
So what was the first place that you investigated?
My very first place? Mm-hmm. It was a Lowell Memorial Auditorium in Lowell, Massachusetts.
Interesting.
It was a site of a couple murders inside the main stage area. And reports were saying that you could see the curtains move on their own when there's no ventilation back there. You could watch shadows walk across the stage. Some of the seats would open up and shut by themselves. I'm probably 14, 15 by now. And going in there, it was kind of, I went in there with the predisposed attitude that, oh yeah, it is haunted in here. So I heard and saw things that couldn't explain. Like I saw the curtain moving and it looked like a hand was moving the curtain. So we went back there to find out there was nobody there. But upon further investigation, one of the older people I was with saw that there actually was a ventilation up above the main stage by the crow's nest and all that. And that was actually blowing air down, but it still, to me, looked like a hand going across the curtain. So that kind of got my interest. Never saw any seats move, never saw a shadow move or anything. But that was my initiation into, you know, actually investigating. And I've done Prospect Place in Dresden, which was pretty interesting. We were down in the basement. If you don't know Prospect Place, it was an old Underground Railroad stop. And the slaves were safe there. Now, the story goes, a bounty hunter had found out about the place and was there knocking on the door wanting, you know, to give up, wanting the owner to give up the slaves. Well, the owner swore up and down. The bounty hunter went in and looked around and couldn't find anybody. And all the ranch hands, all the farm hands, rather, that were there actually grabbed the bounty hunter and hung him in the barn at Prospect Place. Now, the Underground Railroad was actually a basement system, which was never found. Well, it's under us now, of course, but upon investigating the basement, we had an EVP that said, "Run, Jimmy!" And it was as clear as day, and there was nobody else in the basement with me when I got that. Huh. So that was kind of interesting. Upon going into the barn area, they had the third floor blocked off where it actually happened, all the hanging happened. And there was no electricity out there whatsoever. We got some good K2 spikes out there. Never got any apparition or any pictures or anything of anything, but it was still pretty curious. On the second floor, main door, like a porch room. And one of the daughters fell over that and died. We were able to catch an image of a mist from the outside pointing up to that. It was just a mist. I mean, it could have been anything, but it was kind of coincidental that it was actually right there. So that was one of my more exciting ones. We went to a place in Waverly, Ohio, in Old Anvets, and it used to be a bar, and the owner of the bar had come in some money and supposedly hid it somewhere in there. Well, he was murdered because people wanted to find the money, but nobody's ever found it. Now, in the basement area, we were walking down there. I had a cameraman in front of me. It was just me. I had a flashlight, holding the flashlight. The cameraman was getting his camera up and running so he can do a scope of the area. And out of nowhere, something knocked the flashlight out of my hand. Now, it could have been a muscle spasm. It could have been any number of reasons, but I distinctly felt something hit my hand and knock it out. And that was one of the more wild things that's happened to me. And we got a few EVPs there. We did a place in Roseville, Roseville Prison, which doesn't have a big history. Supposedly, a woman was waiting to get married, and the husband never got married. Husband never showed up, so she jumped off the top of the building onto cement and died. We did get a mist of the area where she jumped from. Excuse me. And on a back stairwell, as I was walking up it, I mean, we weren't getting any kind of response. So I said, "Now, where are you guys?" And as I reviewed the recording, as soon as I said that, something said, "Right behind you." And that was kind of creepy. So I've done quite a few. I've done the Mansfield thing. I've done a lot of different other places that are not well known. A lot of residential areas I did. I did one residential that was in Somerset. A lady had called me and said, "You know, there's something strange. I think there's something in my walls." I asked her and I said, "Well, are you sure it's not raccoons?" And she says, "It might be." So I went over and, you know, I brought another friend of mine over and I was, you know, checking things out. And the scratching I heard in the wall, I'm like, okay, it's probably a raccoon. Well, she had a crawl space up above her second floor. And I looked down through there and there was no way for anything to get in between the walls. When I come back down through, there were actually scratch marks on the outside of the wall that weren't there before. So I had to call another team in and have them come in there and look at it. I don't know what happened with it, but yeah, that was something I wasn't prepared to handle. At the time, I wasn't prepared to handle it. Yeah, I've had my fair share. I've been in places where absolutely nothing's happened. I've been in places where as soon as you walk in the door, something strange is going on, but usually most of it can be, you know, figured out. But there is sometimes where I can't figure something out, and that's when, you know, I look to the science part of it and say, why would this do this? What is the reason behind that? See, back when I was younger, I was like, ooh, yeah, I caught a ghost. Ooh, that's a ghost. But the more I thought about it, it's more like, you know, there's got to be a reason for it. And if there is a soul trapped there, I want to try to figure out a way to get them untrapped and to help them out without, you know, disturbing anything more than I have to. I mean, that's just the way I want to do things.
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up, though. The more years you spend in paranormal investigation, the more you start leading down the road of, with the exception of a handful of things that all of us have ran into, you start going down the road of there has to be a logical explanation for this. And that's when the real fun begins. a lot of people think that it's all fun and games running around in the middle of the night with cameras in warm and cold weather, crawling in dark spaces, sitting around for hours waiting for something to happen, when in reality nothing's going to happen most of the time. And don't get me wrong, I enjoy doing that, but all of us get frustrated with doing that at the same time, especially when you have to go to a location 3, 4, and 5 times and you get squat.
Yeah, exactly. I've done that too.
But when you dig in, when you start digging into it and you start looking at the theory, you start looking at quantum physics, you start looking at the science, you start trying to dive into where these explanations come from, a lot of times when you find those answers, you become, I hate to say this, but you become the skeptic. But here's the reality. You're not the skeptic. You are closing a portion of that investigation, or a portion of that as an explanation that can and does happen regularly. Right, and that itself can be a lot of satisfaction.
It's a lot of satisfaction. I mean, we've been able to debunk a lot of stuff. I mean, stuff that I would look at back when I was younger and say, oh, I don't know how to explain that. But as I learned and as I've been taught, you know, certain things can be explained. There's a reason for this. Check the camera angle, check the reflections, check all this. And more times than not, I mean, I can figure out why something did happen. If you hear a noise like a rock thrown, what's the first thing you do? You look for walls crumbling. You look for ceiling stuff falling down and stuff like that. And that's usually more case than not, you know, what's going on.
Yep. Especially in an old building, whether it be rocks, whether it be something falling, whether it be, you know, any little noise, odds are it came from the building itself or something being disturbed that hasn't been disturbed in a while that's a part of the building. I've seen the craziest things. Well, on one of ours, a window fell that was just sitting there. I've seen pieces of the ceiling fall down. I've seen 2x4s fall to the side. Well, they've been sitting there for years, and here somebody's walking across the room, the floor shake. It wasn't stable in the first place. It just chose that time to slide.
yeah, exactly. And also,
excuse me.
A lot of people don't understand, too, that like if it's extremely cold or if it's extremely warm and you go into a place that doesn't have any kind of heat or air conditioning, wood expands. Concrete does funky things when it's hot and cold. You know, so as things expand or, you know, pull in, you're going to hear thumps and bangs and all that kind of stuff. And that's usually more times, you know, the reason why you're hearing the thumps than anything.
Yeah, absolutely. A brief pause. You're listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality here on BBS Radio. BBS Radio is one of the largest digital radio stations here in the United States. If you want to do a radio show, go with the best. Go with BBS. A little bit of other local news, just so that you're aware. Paranormal Journeys into the Unknown, Gavin Kelly and Paula Purcell out of Nashville, Tennessee, are now on their third month of airing on Amazon. It's a very interesting show. They've signed up for 3 individual seasons, so make sure if you have Amazon Prime to take a look at them. They're a wonderful bunch of people. They've been on the show multiple times. I can't talk enough about them. Another little common thing, make sure that you tune in for Brian Parsons. Brian is actually a wonderful man here in the state of Ohio. He has his own radio show on WCJV. Feel free to look him up and tune in on him. He's going to be doing a lot of local things around the holiday to talk about the paranormal. And most of the events he's doing, and a lot of times when he's doing them over the holidays, he does them so that you can donate charity to homeless families and people that can't afford Christmas. So Brian's a wonderful person. Feel free to look him up. He has a PhD, and he has a lot of experience. Kat Hobson just changed radio station. She advertises on a regular basis. Kat has a wonderful digital radio show that is now on multiple AM stations. Make sure that you listen to her on a regular basis. Kat is a wonderful lady. We're speaking to Jay Pierce on Paranormal Truth and Reality. Jay is going to be working on a documentary with us, and he just got back into the paranormal. So, Jay, let's talk about that a little bit, just so that everybody knows. This is a 2-part documentary. The way it's designed is to show people in at least 5 segments how the paranormal really works. We're going to have some professional investigators, and some professional people from cryptozoology and a few other things as we're doing this across the whole United States of America. And we're going to branch this off into the UK with a UK team eventually that's going to be taking a good look at a good look at investigations. Now, how are we going to do this? Well, first off, we're going to have an amateur team come in. People that are young to investigation, new to investigation less than 10 years, and people that are going to be walking through these sites. They're going to get the basics on what they need to know if they haven't already been trained in it, and we're going to have a host follow them. So Jay's going to introduce a little bit about that here in a little while on the amateur team. The professional team is going to be constructed of a bunch of people that have been in the paranormal in many different fields. Some of these are investigators you're going to know. You've seen them on Destination America. You've seen them on several television channels. And some of these are going to be university professors and other people that are just simply going to look at this in a non-biased approach and say, okay, this is what you're running into, and this is the reality of the paranormal. A few of these are going to be walking through the sites that we're going through as well and doing their own investigation. So we're going to have a unique look at how the paranormal really works. But let's start with the amateur team. Jay, what's your aspect on what you want to see out there?
Well, what I would want to see is one person take over the lead for the amateur team, has knowledge of what's going on in the place, and let the amateur team go in there and what happens, happens. And then we're going to have people that are going to jump at every sound, and that's what we want. I mean, we want to document all of that so we can go in and say, okay, this is why this happened, this is why that happened. But the amateurs are going to actually know what they're doing. I mean, they're going to have some experience in it, but they're not going to be as knowledgeable as some of the older investigators. I mean, that's the best way to put it. I think it's a unique perspective because we can look back at how we were back when we were first starting out and realizing the mistakes we made. And by doing so, we could actually probably learn a little bit more by watching the mistakes that are made, if the mistakes are made by the amateur team. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword. I can look at it and go, oh, I can't believe I was like that when I was, oh, man, I can't believe that. But then I'm like, okay, they have to learn to, we're going to show them the reason why this, you know, happened that way or why that picture looks like that. And I just think it's a heck of an idea. And I'm proud to be part of it.
Yeah, it's actually an amazing concept. Now, listeners, so you know, I don't think this is going to be extreme. I don't think it's going to catch off and you're going to see it on 100 TV shows. That's not the goal of this. The goal of this is to bring it to the paranormal community so that people like you and those in the paranormal that are just starting off get a real concept for what's going on out there. Reality is TV is put together very wonderfully. Everybody that works on it does an excellent job. I have a lot of friends that are working on television shows right now, and I respect them very much. But to the average paranormal investigator, university, and scientist, it's not the way it really operates. So once we have Jay's team come in with a host, and by the way, the host will not be me. You don't want to see my ugly mug on TV, I assure you. Once we have the host come in with them, they're going to break down things in parts as the investigation goes on. We're going to bring in the professionals at the end of this, and they're going to review that evidence. The professionals are going to revisit the locations when and if they can, and they're going to walk through it themselves. They're going to give you their perspective of how the paranormal works and what's going on there. Now, the ultimate goal is hopefully a few of these teams get it all right.
that's
the game plan. But we all know reality is we all started in this the same way, and odds are there's going to be a lot of things that are missed. And when that happens, it's better for everybody to see the reality of that than for it to be covered up for ratings and television.
And not only that, I think it'll make everybody a better investigator. I mean, you can teach all you want, but until you see what you're teaching, you really don't learn.
Yeah. Yep. And I hope to have a lot of people participate somewhere along the line. It would be great if it catches on. It would be great if young investigators wanting to learn how to do this come to us and say, hey, look, I want to be your next amateur team. I want to learn how to do this. I think it'll teach me.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it would be excellent, actually, for some teams that have been in it for 10 or 11 years to come in and go, well, I know my stuff, but I'd still like to look at some of these guys that I respect and that I know and that I've seen on Facebook and that I've seen on television, have them review what I'm doing and tell me what I'm doing wrong. Because that way we're all working as a team.
Yeah, it takes a strong person to be able to do that because everybody's set in their own investigative ways. And if they're shown their way is not the right way, you might get a little feedback from that. But you know what? That's why we're doing what we're doing, is to educate, not to berate or anything like that.
Yeah, no, and it's fine to have different ways. Now, reality is somewhere along the line, if we all want to do this right, there should be a little bit of a guidebook. Just like any job, you know, you can do it a dozen different ways once you learn how to be an artist, a dozen different ways when you learn how to be an audio technician, when you learn how to be a mechanic. You'll have your own little ways of doing things. But all of you started with knowing how to tear the carburetor apart.
Right. You started by learning how to change oil and a tire. So here we go. Mm-hmm. Now you get into big boy stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the concept of the show. So I think it'll be very, very amazing to do. So let's get into equipment a little bit, Jay, since we have some time here. I know you spent some time with equipment, and now you're limited on equipment. I know that you also know that most of my background is in audio and video. What type of equipment would you prefer to see used, not only on the show, but when you're operating yourself?
I guess I'm basically like old school. I mean, a digital recorder, maybe a camera, not a cell phone camera, but a digital camera. I mean, that provides a little bit of interesting sometimes. I mean, not all the time, but sometimes. I would love to have an infrared camera. I would love to have the DVR set up to put cameras everywhere. Maybe even a thermal cam or a temperature gauge or something like that, so we can document, you know, temperature fluctuations and all. But I'm a pretty basic guy. I like the Ovilus. I'd love to have one of those. I don't put a lot of faith in the spirit box, the radio waves and all that. I'm not so sure about that. I'd have to actually see that work to get into it more. But yeah, I'm a basic kind of guy. I love the fact that people are bringing in new equipment and new things. But that's probably something I'm never going to be able to afford down the line. I mean, like the full spectrum cameras, the image makers, and all that. There's no way I could get that. But if I were able to use something like that, it'd be like the ultimate scientific study on them, because you could totally discount a lot of stuff by using those things, I think.
Well, and hopefully somewhere along the line, as we're building the documentary, we'll get some sponsors. We'll be able to use some of their equipment. I know there's some delightful individuals in Nashville, Tennessee, I want to discuss because they create their own equipment. This is a great way to kind of test equipment in the field. Hey, you're creating your own designs. Let's use them and see how that works and so forth. It would be nice to. I'm fascinated with a lot of this equipment. I'm not a big fan of the Ovilus. I'm not a big fan of the Spirit Box, but I think that's just because I've been in the electronics and audio world for quite a long period in time. So mm-hmm. I tend to rip apart most of that stuff pretty easily.
Okay.
But they're still interesting. I mean, they're still good pieces of equipment. I've seen some fascinating things from other investigators. In fact, Peter Sacco, a person that's been on my radio show a couple of times, and I'm a big fan of his work. He does a show in Canada that he has a team that goes along with him. One of the ladies on the show is a medium, and she has her own created form of a spirit box.
Mm-hmm.
And it is kind of unique to hear the responses that she gets out of that. Now, I don't know anything about the box. I don't know anything about the construction. I spoke to her several times. She's a fascinating woman. But every now and then when you're watching the recordings and what they're getting, they get some responses that do give you chills.
Direct response?
Yeah, direct responses.
Wow, that'd be
like,
interesting.
Yeah, she's gotten some names from time to time. She's gotten some communication back with her. Stating, yes, I'm here, you know, little weird things like that that just come out of the blues.
Wow.
Yeah, so it is interesting from time to time how sometimes people can construct these things and get some sort of response. There's an app, actually, believe it or not, that, and I'm not a big one on apps, that an overseas person that I met, Brian, created, and I tested his app just out of curiosity. He's got a two-part app. One of them is almost a lot like the Ovilus and the Spirit Box and so forth. It goes out and uses radio signals. You can adjust the echo verbiage to get the echo to come back to you in the whole nine yards. And another one is designed to play music in the background while you're doing your EVP or using this other app. And it's got a conglomeration of different musics designed to attack certain things. For instance, if it's the demonic, you have some real loud, aggressive music, and some of it's been researched. It's old Celtic music and all kinds of things that were supposed to be for the evil side of things, and vice versa. Ironically, while using both of those apps together, I did get some experiences that I can't explain. I actually had a lamp fly off of a counter onto the floor. I actually had a door open up for no reason, doorknob turned, opened up, that I still can't debunk, and this is in my own house, by the way, guys. I actually had a few pictures come off of the wall and fly onto the ground, not just fall off the wall. They came off the wall and flew onto the ground. So I can't quite explain that. Could be logical. Nevertheless, it was interesting.
When you get that kind of reaction, it's like, okay, how am I going to debunk this, and can I debunk this? Do I admit that it was paranormal? Well, if you can't explain it, it's not normal. So, yeah, it is paranormal.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, or at least it is until you can explain it.
Right, exactly, yep.
So but let's talk about some of the locations that you'd like to go around here in Ohio to start with. I know we're going to be traveling to Nashville, Tennessee to a couple of locations, and probably Louisville, Kentucky, because I've already worked out hopefully some deals on that. But let's talk about some of the things we'd like to see here in Ohio to kind of get people excited about this documentary so that when the time comes, hopefully we get a lot of you listeners out there calling us going, hey, I want to be a part of this.
Yeah, see, that's where the issue comes in, because we don't want to do all the big names like the penitentiary and all them areas. Although doing the penitentiary would be good to go in there and actually debunk some of the stuff that's going on in there. I mean, that would be like the ultimate, but it's been there, done that, you know. We want to try to do places that are kind of well known but not oversaturated on TV, because it'll be just like, oh yeah, they're going to that place, and well, we don't want to watch that. I mean, you agree with that, Chris?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'd like to see some unique individual sources that I mean, it's great to do the big sources, don't get me wrong, but the goal here is to do things that people don't regularly see.
Yeah, I mean, if the listeners out there know of places, I mean, feel welcome to inbox me or Chris, and, you know, maybe we'll take your ideas and run with them.
Yeah, absolutely. Excuse me, I have a bit of a cold tonight, everybody. The other thing to remember, listeners, as you're listening tonight and as you play back the show and so forth, if you're here in Ohio or the surrounding areas, if you're a paranormal team and you're serious about this, because this is not going to be something that's going to make you a fortune, you're probably not going to be seen on A&E. You're probably not going to be seen on television. I'm not going to sugarcoat that. I have worked out a few deals to hopefully get us on Netflix and to get us on Amazon, which anybody that's ever done documentaries before knows is not a big deal. If you're serious about really getting into the nitty-gritty of the paranormal, you want to help teach, or you want to learn, and you just want to get out there, get your team out there, get your name out there, you feel what you're doing is a good thing, then we could use you. It's not a joke. It's not something that beats around the bush. Jay and I both put something out on Facebook, and the reactions got silly.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, here we go. It's another offer. Yeah, it's all fake. We've heard this before.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. there are thousands of offers that are out there, and 99% of them never go through. And when some of the people responded on my page, I understood why, because some of them are already working with television shows on Destination America and on A&E and so forth. So when they got tagged on it, they were more than polite to come back and go, oh, it's just another venture. I get these all the time. Don't worry about it. And that type of comment doesn't bother me, because come on, these guys are on TV shows. Of course, they probably get 1,000 pitches a day.
Yeah.
But everybody else was kind of just not taking it very seriously. And so that everybody's aware, it is very serious. We do have the funds. We are going to do it. We are going to put it together very well. We do have some people that we're going to introduce here on the radio show, as a matter of fact, as well as on Facebook and several other things that are going to be a part of this already. We've done some basic interviews. In fact, there's a wonderful gentleman that may be listening tonight. His name is Joel. I think he's a great guy. He's a wonderful musician. He's got a pretty face. So we're going to make him a part of this, and he's been more than glad to volunteer his time. I think that's awesome. So if you're interested, by all means, message us, because this is going to be something that hopefully becomes educational and can go through the circuits as being that, not just another idea for a TV show. This is not what we're doing it for.
Go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you're fine. Go ahead.
I was going to say, this is the real deal. This is going to change the perspective of how paranormal investigations are done, and hopefully, like you say, teach people. But it is not a joke. This is the real deal. We're actually doing this, and the more help we get, the better. I mean, get a hold of us. We'd definitely love to have you.
Yep, absolutely. Jay, let's get into a few things. I know we still have some time here, so let's go back into you a little bit. Let's get the people familiar with you, because obviously you're going to be doing a lot of work with this, and we're going to be seeing you. We're going to be hearing from you multiple times. Let's talk about some of your real concepts on how you prefer to do things, not only on your team. I know we covered that a couple of times, but as an aspect on the paranormal. I know we all have our own way of going about things, and we all have our own vision of going about things. That's one thing that varies from person to person. So let's get an idea of what your vision is.
Well, my vision is really simple. I mean, from years of experience and trial and error, I think the most logical approach is to find out as much history as you can about the place you're investigating. I mean, history is the biggest factor. You got to find out what events took place there, how that affected other areas. The building itself has to be an issue. Different climate, outside noise, ambiance. There's a million things put in perspective, and you got to walk in there. I like to walk in there open-minded and say, okay, I've heard the stories, now show me. You know, I'm not going to go in there to a room where somebody hung themselves and expect to see somebody swinging there. I want to stay in that room for a predetermined amount of time and see if I get anything at all. I'm not going to go by electromagnetic frequencies or anything like that, because, you know, I don't know if the building's wired or not, which we should know if you go in there, if you do the research right. And it's a no-nonsense approach. We're not going in there to disturb them. We're going in there to find out if they are there. And if they are there, we're going to find out why they're there and why they're still there. And if it's something that we can't explain, then, you know, we take a break and say, okay, let's go back and let's see if we can get something else here and try to figure out what's going on. It's not about going from room to room, and it's kind of like fishing. You got to stay in one area long enough to get a bite. If you don't get a bite, then eventually you move on to another area. And you got to walk in knowing that nothing could happen. But you also got to be aware that something possibly could happen when you least expect it. Now, as a seasoned investigator, you walk in and you kind of have a sense. It's something you develop. It's not like you're psychic or anything. It's like you have a sense where the room feels heavier. You say, all right, there's either something going on here the first thing you check is see if there's high EMF in here, because that'll put a false reading on your body. That'll mess with your body bad. And if there's no high EMF, you got a legitimate reason to say, okay, I'm going to stay in this room for a little bit, maybe do a voice recorder session, you know. Work things out. Don't jump from spot to spot to spot. You know, take your time, investigate thoroughly. Look at everything in the room. Remember everything in the room the way it is. Because if you come back in that room and something moved, you got to figure out why it moved. You got to start asking questions to other team members if they're there. Did you go in this room? Did you move this? Did you shut that door over there or something? You know, that's the way investigations should be. If you're doing an EVP session and you hear a noise that you know what it is, you tag it and say, well, that was a cricket, or that was a dog barking in the distance. Excuse me, I have a cold too. Things like that, so you can discount anything outside, any natural reasons why you're getting sounds. If you hear thumping, find out where the thumping's coming from, for one. Find out if any of your team members are, you know, walking upstairs or anything, or knock the chair or something. Always keep in communication with your other investigators, because they may be doing something you're not aware of, and they're not telling you that that was them. So that's another thing you got to keep in mind. That's what I would keep in mind. When you enter a building, you automatically enter with respect, utmost respect. You don't walk in there with an attitude. You don't walk in there and say, all right, I'm this big, bad ghost hunter. Show me where you're at. No, you walk in there with respect. If there are souls there, they were living at one time, and they should be treated with it, with respect. No-nonsense approach. No goofing around while you're in the middle of an investigation. Once we take a break and leave the building, you can freak out as much as you want. But when you're in the building, you stay professional and you keep your calm. I mean, this is how I would do things.
Well, that's a good thing to actually do. I know you and I have a different approach when it comes to the history. I prefer, of course, that's because I'm a host most of the time and I'm a tag-along. I prefer to go in there with knowing absolutely nothing about the building or the history. I do that afterwards because it keeps me partial. I keep my mind clear that way. Because a lot of these places have twisted histories. Such and so died here. Such and so got hung here. Such and so got murdered here. Blah, 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 blah. I don't want to know any of that until after I leave.
Right, which is why I said earlier, I think it's a good idea for one person on the amateur team to know the history and then let the others go in there and whatever happens, happens. And then that person can say, okay, well, we do have a report of this happening here, so yeah, you did catch on to that. I mean, that's why I said that. I mean, that's a good idea.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense for several reasons. You're going to have amateur investigators that will learn on their own that way without being predetermined, I guess you could say, on the situation.
Yeah, predisposed to it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing is, if somewhere along the line we allow somebody that claims themselves to be a psychic medium or so forth come in there, if they know nothing about the history coming in and one person does and it's not shared at all, who knows? Maybe we'll catch somebody that can actually show us that that they have some talent.
Oh, definitely. It's a win-win no matter which way you do it.
Yeah. Now the perspective on the closing here on the advanced end, now that you know about the teams going in there and doing things, the goal on the advanced end here is after the host has done all of that, he's going to come back and he's going to say, hey, look, this is blah, 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 and this is what he's going to do. Now, we'll have those professionals come in. Some of these guys have 23 to 43 years of experience in the paranormal. Some of these people are very, very well known. Some of these people are college professors that aren't known at all, and some of these people are just old-fashioned paranormal investigators that are very good at what they do, creating equipment. They've counseled on shows before and so forth, and they're going to come in and they're going to review the evidence first off in a non-biased situation just by looking at it on the screen. And they're going to be honest about it. They're going to say, okay, so this is what I see is going on here. There are two possibilities or three possibilities, or this is what it is. and then they're going to break it down. Some of these guys, when they have the chance, are going to visit those locations, and then they're going to walk you through this process. They're going to go, so now that we've seen the video and I've told you what's going on, let's show you what's going on here. And if they can explain it off as piping, as EMF being leaks because of this, as old creaking or movement, and be able to be reproducible, they're going to stand there and they're going to show you this from their perspective. So that makes this perhaps one of the most uniquely copyrighted shows that's out there right now.
And it's very exciting because as an investigator, I'm learning things too. And it'd be kind of cool to watch these guys, you know, the ones that have been through the ringer, so to say, and say, okay, well, now I know how to do that the right way. So, yeah, it's going to be a learning experience for myself.
Yeah, oh, and me too, as a host. I mean, I love watching paranormal investigators and talking to them all the time anyway. I love tailing along. I always learn something when I'm tailing along with somebody. Mm-hmm. And that's what I enjoy doing, which is why I never claim to be an investigator myself, but I claim to be a host, and I've told everybody that. I think I told you that when I first met you.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
because I'm in it for the learning process. Well, everybody, you've been listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston. You've been speaking to Jay Pierce. Jay Pierce is going to be working with me and several other people on a documentary through 2018 to hopefully be out by 2019, depending on the filming process, called Paranormal Reality. Make sure that you keep tuned, because we're going to have an incredible cast once we get it all worked out that has volunteered to be a part of this in their time. They're very educational, very experienced, and we're going to have some wonderful non-professionals and teams that are going to be joining us so that they can show their approach and their situation and get their evidence reviewed by the other professionals. So it's going to be a wonderful, wonderful thing. Jay can always be found on Facebook. You can look him up as Jay Pierce. He's pretty easy to find. He's also an admin on RTP, as well as several other groups that's related to Paranormal Truth and Reality and Real-Time Paranormal. So make sure that you look him up, ask any questions that you have. Feel free to let me know as well. A little bit of more information before we end tonight. Paranormal Truth and Reality going into the new year will be doing multiple things, including adding a UK investigation team. There will also be a UK radio host for Paranormal Truth and Reality. Hopefully, we're going to be getting another radio host to work on another day here in the USA. We'll also be using BBS for that. He'll have his own unique style and his own unique perspective through Paranormal Truth and Reality on top of myself. So we're advancing in many, many avenues, including social media. Keep an eye out for this. It's all a part of the process. And it's all for you, investigators, and you that are interested in the paranormal. Just so that you're all aware, we've had an incredible amount of differences throughout the paranormal. Paranormal Truth and Reality's goal was to unite everybody as investigators and talk about the truth of the paranormal. We're getting to the point to where we're able to do that. We're getting to the point to where we're able to educate and show that. And this is the whole goal of the documentary and everybody involved in it. Wonderful team. You've been listening to Jay Pierce, Christopher Houston, Paranormal Truth and Reality. Next week, I'm not going to tell you my guest quite yet, but look out for the advertisements. He's a wonderful individual, has his own production team. He's been working in the paranormal for quite a number of years. He actually does a lot of things for many, many paranormal teams. You're going to love him. I'm going to end this as I end every single show. Remember, in the paranormal, as you're about to learn here in the next 2 years, truth should always be that reality. Whether you're an amateur, whether you're in the business for 23 years, whether you call you a professional, whether you call yourself an expert or not, we all work together. We're all on the same team. I'm going to let you go. You enjoy your weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.